Nah. Not. Esha. This. Para avara. Of higher or lower. Matihi. Such discrimination. Bhavataha. Of your lordship. Nanu. Indeed. Syat. There can be. Jantoho. Of ordinary living entities. Yatha. As. Atma suhridaha. Of one who is the friend. Jagataha. Of the whole material world. Tatapi. But still. There is not such a demonstration of intimacy or difference. Sangsevaya. According to the degree of service rendered by the devotee. Surataroho. Iva. Like that of the desire tree in Vaikuntha. Which offers fruits according to the desire of the devotee. Te yo prasadaha. Benediction or blessing. Seva anurupam. According to the category of service one renders to the Lord. Udayaha. Manifestation. Na. Not. Para. Avaratvam. Discrimination due to higher or lower levels. Translation. Unlike an ordinary living entity, my Lord, you do not discriminate between friends and enemies, the favorable and the unfavorable, because for you there is no conception of higher and lower. Nonetheless, you offer your benedictions according to the level of one's service, exactly as a desire tree delivers fruits according to one's desires and makes no distinction between the lower and the higher. In purport, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord clearly says, Ye yatha mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajamyaham. As one surrenders to me, I reward him accordingly. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jibesharup hoy Krishna nittodash. Every living being is an eternal servant of Krishna. According to the service the living entity renders, he automatically receives benedictions from Krishna, who does not make distinctions, thinking, here is a person in an intimate relationship with me, and here is a person I dislike. Krishna advises everyone to surrender to him. Sarvadhaman parityaja mam ekang sharanam braja. One's relationship with the Supreme Lord is in proportion to that surrender and the service one renders unto the Lord. Thus, throughout the entire world, the higher or lower positions of the living entities are selected by the living entities themselves. If one is inclined to dictate that the Lord gives something, that the Lord grants something, one receives benedictions according to his desires. If one wants to be elevated to the higher planetary systems, the heavenly planets, he can be promoted to the place he desires. And if one wants to remain a hog or a pig on earth, the Lord fulfills that desire also. Therefore, one's position is determined by one's desires. The Lord is not responsible for the higher or lower grades of our existence. This is further explained quite definitely in Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitri vrataha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mad yajino pimam. Some people want to be promoted to the heavenly planet, some want to be promoted to Pitriloka, and some want to remain on earth. But if one is interested in returning home, back to Godhead, he can be promoted there also. According to the demands of a particular devotee, he receives a result by the grace of the Lord. The Lord does not discriminate, thinking, here is a person favorable to me, and here is a person who is not favorable. Rather, he fulfills the desires of everyone. Therefore, the Shastras enjoin, Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradhihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Whether one is without desire, the condition of their devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection culminating in Krishna consciousness. According to one's position, whether as a devotee, a karmi, or a jnani, whatever one wants, one can get if one fully engages in the service of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj prays to Nrsimhadev. This is one of the prayers. So this is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. In the beginning of Bhagavatam, Vyasadev states that is Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam that will deliver us from material bondage, understanding the science of God. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. It becomes possible by this Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam and suggests that this subject, the scientific delineation of the principles of Godhead, suggests that that will be treated here in Bhagavatam, and it certainly is. In many of the prayers, we find in many of the prayers throughout Bhagavatam that they delineate the science of God in the form of praising a person. If we have to praise a person, we may do so in a vague way. You are beautiful, you are learned, you are powerful, but more detail will make the matter more clear. So Krishna is beautiful, so exactly how he is beautiful, that is described in Bhagavatam. Summary of Bhagavatam is the prayers of Brahma in which we have extant in the world at the present time, the fifth chapter of Sri Brahma Samhita. So we have there a description. Yang Shama Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam. For instance, we have a description how he is powerful. Yang Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruta Stunvanti Divyai Stava. Even the great powerful demigods, they offer respect to him. Therefore, we can understand he is the most powerful. So there's much description within Srimad Bhagavatam of the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not just a name, God. Srila Prabhupada often said, it is not enough to say that God is great. It's certainly a good thing to say, but one should know how he is great. And that is particularly delineated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Although it is not possible for us as Jantoho, we are the ordinary living beings, that word is given here in this verse. It is not possible for us to fully understand Krishna. And it's not possible for Krishna to fully understand Krishna. Well, Krishna knows everything. But Krishna is unlimited. Now, his knowledge is also unlimited, but then his glories are more unlimited. Can you understand? No. I also don't understand. I'm saying it. I don't. Krishna himself doesn't understand, so what will we understand? The point is that his glories are unlimited. But to the extent that he blesses us with intelligence, we can understand his glories as delineated in Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are many theological questions, what is called in Western theological discourse, religious problems, religious questions, and they're very serious questions for the Abrahamic religions, which means Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And if you ever get into a discussion with a Christian or a Muslim, at least previously they didn't used to discuss much, but in the West now, the Christians they used to be known as Bible thumpers. You have to believe in the Bible, and that's all. They're now, from what I can see, many of them are trying to be more friendly in their approach and appear to be open-minded because they got a bad reputation for being. You have to believe in the Bible or you burn in hell. So that actually turned off many, many people. So now they're trying to be more reasonable and to discuss with you. But I usually find that when I have to discuss with a Christian, that within about 3 to 5 minutes, they get completely confused just by asking them a few questions. I'm not here on a Christian thumping or Christian bashing mission, but there are some serious philosophical problems, which is why, despite my Christian upbringing, by around the age of 12, I thought, this doesn't make any sense. For instance, we can ask, well, if God loves everyone, then why does he send most of all of those he loves to hell forever? And if he loves everyone, and you can only get saved by Jesus or Allah or whichever, what's your particular brand of blinkered theology, then why is your doctrine widely promoted and accepted in, for instance, America and not in Thailand? I give the example of Thailand because I lived there for some years and it's a staunchly Buddhist country. And Christians have made very little impact there over all these years. So I give the example. So it seems that God loves the Americans more than the Thais, because if you're born in Thailand, you may never even hear of Jesus. And even if you do, you're raised in such a culture that your tendency is to strongly reject any notion of accepting Christianity. So does God love the Americans more than the Thais? And just a few questions like this throw out people. It's quite surprising, actually, if you think. In some ways, they're intelligent, they study in seminaries, but it seems that these questions never occurred to them. Then a very common problem, theological problem, which is good fodder for the atheists in their Christian bashing, is that if God is good and all-powerful, then why is there evil in the world? And the Christians, Muslims, whatever, they don't really have any answer for that. If God is all good, and He loves us, and He's all powerful, and He can do whatever He likes, then why does He allow so many bad things to go on in the world? The answer is in Srimad Bhagavatam, in this verse. Not directly given here, but the underlying understanding is given here, and from Srila Prabhupada's explanation we can understand that more. Of course, it's a holistic package. We have to study Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to hear and study again and again to understand these points. But the misunderstanding is there in almost all religionists. Including most Hindus, for want of a better word, that this world is made by God for us to enjoy. And we have to bribe Him with some puja and pretend we love Him. Prabhuji! And then, because He's stupid like us and He responds to flattery. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing the perverse mentality of these so-called theists. Then He throws us a few dollars or rupees if you're in India. So that's what to do. You see him. Yeah. But watch out, because if you do anything wrong, He'll bash you too. So it is called the problem of evil. If God is good, then why is there bad in the world? Some years ago in The Week magazine, a weekly magazine published in India, the question of does God exist or not was covered. And they asked different people to give their opinions, as if that's the, just like doing a survey. Do you like Coke better than Pepsi? And see what the votes come up. What are the votes? And according to Pepsi, people like Pepsi better. Although according to the sales, people like Coke better. Actually, no one likes it. I didn't drink it for about 40 years, but it doesn't taste nice at all anyway. Maybe some people like it. It's all by hype. It's all sold by hype. So, the question came. One of the persons asked was Ram Jethmalani. Did I say that right? Okay. So he said, I used to believe in God. But when I went to the site of the earthquake in Bhuj, in Gujarat, and I saw children trapped under the rubble of their school, crying piteously, then I decided, I'm paraphrasing again, that God didn't exist. So, according to Ram, not the original Ram, but this Ram, God did exist, and then he decided God didn't exist, and then God ceased to exist. Because he said so. Let's take a vote. Who believes in God? Raise your hand. Who doesn't believe in God? Take it. Okay, I wonder. Oh, in the last poll, God did exist, but now He doesn't exist anymore. Okay, try and revive Him. 3 days He'll be dead, and then you can revive Him. Whoops. That's another problem, theological problem. How does God die? They killed God, and then He came back to life again. Strange ideas. Here in Bhagavatam is the science of God, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. Why is it that God appears? If there's God and He's equal to all, then why does He seem to favor some and disfavor others? And why do the bad people get away with so many things and they seem to be doing better than others? Another strange manifestation of the Abrahamic religions is the belief in Satan, known in Hindi as Shaitan, I believe. In Bengali it's called Shaitan, who is a competitor with God. And he's trying to win over the earth, but God's just ahead all the time, just on top. But there are Satanists, people who worship Satan in the Western countries, and they say, we think God lost. Satan's in control of this world, not God. If you do wrong, you do better. So better to worship Satan. And they do. And they have a registered religion. And they have churches and a church of Satan. Seems to make sense. Right? If you do bad, you get away with it. Seems you can get away with it. Satan seems to be in control, not God. So this is a problem. Why is there bad in the world if God is good and all-powerful and He loves us? Why do people who believe in God suffer? Why is it that there's a beautiful girl who smiles nicely and never did any harm to anyone, and then one day she's crushed under a truck and her legs are all mangled, and from that point on she's physically, what do they call it now, differently abled? No, physically challenged, it's still going on in India, but now they call it differently abled. It used to be spastics, and then they called them physically handicapped, then physically challenged. Now they're called differently abled. And in Hindi it's still, I saw the sign, Vikalanga. So just be straightforward. Just be straightforward about it, that's all. So, why does that happen? Why? I believed in God. There's a narration in the one book I published about 3 years ago, Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. There was one man came to Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and said that I had a friend. He used to be a great devotee of Gaura. Gaura means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But now he's not. And the man explained that this man was a devotee of Gaura. And he used to say, Gaura, Gaura, Gaura. And one fine day, his dearly beloved only daughter became sick. So, what did he do? He chanted Gaura, 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 more and more. And he increased his devotion. And he'd go daily to his guru and bow down and pray, Gaura, 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 save my child. But far from being saved, she died after prolonged agonizing suffering. So, when this man went to see his friend again, he made some, I can't remember exactly. So, what's going on with your Gaura? He said, no, there's no such person as Gaura. No, Gaura. What are you talking about, Gaura? What happened? Well, if Gaura had actually been God, he would have saved my child. His glories would have been proclaimed everywhere, how he saved the child of his devotee. But there's no, don't say that word in my presence. He was completely against it. So the person said, well, what happened? He said to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, it's a challenge to him, you may say. So what happened to that man's devotion? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, he never actually had any devotion for Gaura. He was worshipping Satan in the form of Gaura. He wasn't worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who Srivash Thakur worshipped. And he gave so many examples. Srivash Thakur, in his house, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would dance with uproarious kirtan every night. One night in the inner quarters, the women's quarters, it used to be that women's quarters used to be separate from men, there was some disturbance. So Srivas went to see what had happened. Why are the women crying? Because Srivas's son has died. And Srivas told them, "You stupid women, stop crying. Don't disturb Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We get children birth after birth. How many births did you get the Supreme Lord dancing in your house? Just shut up, keep quiet." So they shut up. And they didn't want to shut up, but he said, "If you don't shut up, then I'm going to die too. The Ganga's over there, I'm going to go and drown myself." So then, after some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I don't feel the same happiness as usual. Has something untoward happened in this house?" Of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows everything. Shiva said, "No. How could anything bad happen if you're present?" He said, "No, tell me, what's what?" I said, "Well, actually, my son died." "Why didn't you tell me?" He said, "Well, I didn't want to stop your ecstasy. That would be a great disservice." So it unfolded like that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that this is Gaura Bhakti. Rupa Goswami, the Chatak, he gave the prayer just like the Chatak. He'll only take the rain from the cloud. He'll only take water to drink from the cloud. There may be huge puddles of water all around. He won't take it. He'll only take it from the cloud. So in the same way, the devotee will only take mercy from Krishna. Even there may be demigods and so many others who can offer benediction, but no, only Krishna. So he gave so many examples of what actual bhakti means. Ahaituki. Ahaituki means without any personal desire, but the full manifestation of Ahaituki bhakti means that not only is it manifest with any cause, but it's also not spoiled by any cause. That even if everything goes against what I consider to be me, in terms of my present terrestrial definition, then I just see. That is what I deserve. But I must go on. If something bad happens, we think Krishna. If something very nice happens, we think Krishna's mercy. If something very bad happens, we think Krishna's mercy. Both ways. Why is that? Because the devotee understands that, well, first of all, he doesn't ask anything from Krishna. Pure devotee doesn't ask, "Give me this, give me that, give me something else." And when something apparently bad happens, such as the cell phone going off in the class, which you can kindly turn off, then he just thinks that, well, actually, I deserve much worse, but Krishna's just giving me a little suffering to make me realize, to help me to stop this perverse mentality of trying to enjoy this material world. Krishna's just bashing me a little bit. I deserve much more, but because I'm materially attached, Krishna's just giving me a little punishment to show me how bad this world is, and then I should sever my attachment to this material world and become fully surrendered to Krishna. So this is a devotee's mentality. Krishna, he is neutral. Of course, this all has to be explained carefully and understood carefully. He's neutral and he also favors his devotees. We will find in Bhagavad Gita the well-known verse which treats this subject that's under discussion today. That the Supreme Lord, he is equal to all. So he says that in Bhagavad Gita. He says to Arjuna again and again, he speaks about samatvam, samatvam yoga uchate. Yoga is equanimity. And Krishna gives so many examples of this, that one should be equipoised in labha and alabha, gain and loss, in jaya and ajaya, in victory and defeat. Krishna gives so many examples of this. One should see all equal, the pundit, the cow, the dog, the dog eater, the elephant. One should see them all as equal. So Krishna himself says, I am also equal to all. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Sorry. Samoham sarvabhutanam. I am equal to all. Name dveshosti na priyaha. I don't hate anyone. That sounds like God. And no one is my dear also. That doesn't sound like God. But then in the very next line, he apparently contradicts himself by saying, Ye bhajanti tamam bhakta. Maite te shu chapyaham. But if one's my devotee, I like him. So apparently contradicts himself. So as God, he's neutral, he's fair. As Krishna, he loves his devotees. But wait a minute, isn't Krishna God? Yes. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Personality. Personality means he has likes and dislikes. Personality means he's not just some robot that's programmed to give out benedictions and punishments. Or a robot, you put some food in front of him, leave it there for a few, mutter some blah, 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 and then go away, and then you come back, and after 15 minutes you can call it prasadam, and you can sell it and get more money than you would if you hadn't done that, because people like prasadam. So he's not a robot. He's not a robot that if you perform some pious activity, that he is obliged to send you to the heavenly worlds, as is the nasty karma mimamsa idea. This is, although it's karma, karmavad, it's actually a precursor of the impersonalism, because they see there's no need of any God. If God is there, but he's just, okay, you do some good and then he has to give you good results. You do some bad, he has bad results. So depersonalizing him. That he can like someone. If he wants, he likes someone. Why not? Why do you love your wife, if you love your wife? Well, I don't know. I never really listed it out. But anyway, she's my wife. And I love my wife. So it doesn't need explaining. It's a natural bond. So, Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is neutral. Why is that? How is he neutral? He killed Hiranyakashipu. He favored Prahlad. That shows how he's neutral. Because both were from the Daitya race. Race or class, whatever. So, God, for one, this vague term, God, he is upholding the order in the universe. That is the task he has accepted. He's accepted means, how does he execute his task? He lies down and goes to sleep. He lies down and goes to sleep, and then he's just enjoying himself. Time to time, the demigods come and say, hey, we got a problem. He says, oh, okay. I'll come. So for him it's not a big task. But he upholds the order in the universe. And the daityas, they are always trying to upset the order. The order is that those who are pious, those who are godly, they should be in charge of the universe. Or at least think they're in charge. They have the privilege of thinking, we are in charge. And the demons, they are the rebels. And they think, just by our own strength, we shall conquer. So the daityas, they get strong from time to time, and Krishna puts them in their place when the demigods are incapable of doing so. Vishnu. Vande Vishnum Bhavabhayaharam Sarvalokaikanatham. So that is Vishnu. And Krishna, he's dancing. Vishnu may be dancing also, but here he's better known for, at least he doesn't dance in public. He's more formal. So Vishnu is overseeing the universe, and he's neutral because all living beings are his vibhinangsha, his separated parts and parcels. So daityas, they are punishable. Not simply by birth, but they take, living beings take such a birth because they have such an attitude, just like Krishna's attitude is given here. Paravaramati, his whole attitude is that he doesn't discriminate between higher and lower. So, those who want to be sinful, they get the opportunity. So they take birth as daityas. But then if someone is born in a daitya family, but he's a great devotee, Krishna recognizes. Whereas if someone is directly Krishna's son, but he has the attitude of a demon, he might get killed by Krishna, as actually happened. See this... The demons, they were, Jarasandha would criticize Krishna that you killed your own maternal uncle. He killed his own son also, in Narak, Narakasura, his own son, because he's a rascal. So, he got, of course, everyone is his son. When I say he's a rascal, it means Narakasura is a rascal, not that Vishnu is a rascal for killing him. So, everyone has an equal opportunity. That is the point. Everyone as Krishna doesn't favor someone or disfavor someone, but according to how they reciprocate with him. Yayata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajamyaham. And we ourselves make our own situations. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhuktritvehi turuchyate. We ourselves make our own situation. We got. If we're in a mess, don't blame God. We put ourselves in this situation. By our desires and by our activities, we made such and such a situation. So, this answer, you see, the blind religionists, they think that, well, we're born and then we have one birth and then we either go to heaven forever or we go to hell forever. There are many, many problems with this idea, which are solved by understanding the actual fact of the matter is that we have many, many births and we get different situations according to our previous activities and desires under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. Karmana daivanetrena jantur dehopapattaye. According to our desires and our activities, we get a certain kind of birth under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and his representatives for the administration of the material world, namely the demigods. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada stresses that we get what we desire. So You may say, well, who would desire to become a pig? But Srila Prabhupada gives this example. If you want, you can become a pig. So you may ask, well, who would want to become a pig? Many people want to be pigs. By their lifestyle now, you can understand that they don't want a human birth. The way they're living, a human birth is an impediment for them. Yeah, it's a fact. If people simply want to eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, then the pig's body is a much better body than the human body. If they want to have sex without restriction, food without restriction, then they're better off in a pig body. So Krishna gives them a pig body. Or a monkey body. Of course, monkeys, they're good sadhus in some ways. They're vegetarian. They live in the forest, some of them. They don't get married. But they're like some sadhus nowadays. They have a lot of girlfriends also. But they're monkeys. They desire to be like that. So we get the body according to our desire. Now you may say, well, I wanted to be the prime minister. But in a country of 130 crore people, there may be at least 130 lakh who want to be the prime minister. But there's only one job available, government job, but not such a stable one. So, what happened to the other 129? Oh, I never learned to subtract in lakhs. 129,999,999. They'll also get the opportunity according to the intensity of their desire and according to their activities. Maybe not in this life, maybe in a future life. Every activity we do that produces some karma, which goes on for at least 10 lives, minimum. So, someone may have a very strong desire. I wanted to be the prime minister, but all I got was defeated in the local panchayat election. But in the next life, you may have the opportunity. Not exactly the prime minister, but a group of dogs are running around in the village where you are defeated, and you are the biggest dog, and all the other dogs are afraid of you. So you become the chief, you become the prime minister of the local dogs. You wanted to be a leader. This is what happened. This is what happens. Maybe at the bacteria level, they also have competition. Who is the most beautiful Miss World bacteria? Maybe. We don't know what is their level of consciousness. Who's the most powerful bacteria going around gobbling up the other bacteria? So they may have opportunity. So this explains, yeah, you're going to get some reaction for that. At least you got singled out. So, Krishna is fair. He's not biased. But he's a person. So if someone comes to him with love, he's a very loving person, he'll reciprocate with that also. That doesn't mean that he can be flattered. He's not a mundane person who can be flattered and bought. That was seen with Duryodhana wanting to pull Krishna to his side by offering him all nice foods, princely facilities. Krishna would not go with Duryodhana. It's not the recommended thing to do, generally, if the king invites you, could you all please turn off your cell phones? Everyone has got a cell phone. Those who have not yet turned it off, please do so. You may think no one's going to call me, but they may do also. So please turn it off. So it's a very undiplomatic thing to do. If the king calls you, extends some, extends some favor to you, invites you, come take lunch with me. It's not everyone that gets invited to lunch with the king, or in the modern age, the prime minister. So to refuse it, actually in the days of kings, it was more of a dangerous thing to do. With the prime minister, someone may refuse. You may be offered the prime minister's award for this or that, and you might refuse it as a political statement, and you can get away with it. But if there's a king, he's more powerful than a prime minister. So if the king invites you and you say no, it's a big rebuff. And normally people wouldn't do that. But Krishna said he's not interested. He's not interested to go with Duryodhan. It might seem that, well, Duryodhan, he's offering friendship to Krishna. But Krishna knows that his intention is not sincere. So he didn't go. If Duryodhana had sincerely invited Krishna, then Krishna would have gone. Maybe with some caveat also, that well, first you make some amends for all the offenses that you've done to my devotees. Then we'll think about it. You want to call me? Okay. But there's some things you have to do first. So Krishna is neutral, but not in exactly the same way as that figure we see, the justice, the goddess of justice, is holding a scale and with a blindfold on her eyes. Krishna is not like that. He sees everything and everyone, and he understands their intention also. The blindfold on the imaginary goddess of justice. Justice is imaginary in this world, that's for sure. Well, at least secularly administered justice. That's another topic. So the idea is that one should be neutral. One should not favor or disfavor anyone for who they are or what they are. In other words, if someone is very well-known, popular, and famous, and they do a crime, they should be punished in the same way as someone who's not well-known and popular and famous. This certainly does not happen here in India. That's definitely not true. And it's probably true in most places also, but it's quite pronounced here in India. Although, increasingly, government ministers do get arrested for corruption, but the number of arrests is just a drop in the ocean. And someone who's well-known and famous and popular, they might do some crime such as abetting terrorism and just get a mild sentence, because they're well-known and popular and famous. Abetting, helping in the killing of hundreds of people, but they just get a mild sentence, even though they're guilty of aiding and abetting terrible murder, but they get away with it. So, justice is supposed to be neutral. But Krishna, he is like that, as Vishnu. That is being discussed now. But personally, he loves his devotees, and so he lets them off from everything. Now that might seem to be favoritism, But it's not favoritism because he gives everyone the same opportunity to be his devotee. Savadhaman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshayishami mashvacha. This is open to everyone. Everyone can be freed from whatever bad things they have done if they surrender to Krishna sincerely. But then after this, Krishna says that this should not be spoken. Don't tell this to the envious, the sense enjoyers, those who are not my devotees. May say, well, then Krishna's not fair to everyone. No, Krishna says, don't say it to them because they won't hear it anyway, and they'll take the message and what I'm giving and mess it up and misinterpret it. So better you don't speak this Bhagavad Gita among them, because they're not sincere. So those who mess up the message, that Krishna is making it clear that this message in one sense is meant for everyone, but in another sense, no, not everyone can take it. Not that I am barring them, Krishna, not that Krishna is barring them, but they bar themselves, they lock themselves out from Krishna's mercy by their unceasing attitude of enmity toward Krishna, envy of Krishna. So all these points should be understood. There's no such discussion generally of such points. Generally people come to temples, they pray, give me this, give me that. They take a few photos, if you're allowed to take photos in the temple. And they go to the snack bar, and that's it. And then they go off to the movies or whatever. Some families have a routine. This day we go to the temple, this day we go to the movies, and this day we watch this serial on TV, like that. There's no serious thought about the nature of God, the nature of this world, the fact that we all have to die. There's no consideration. So there's no such discussion. And therefore, this is a major factor in people becoming atheists. To be an atheist is a very unfortunate situation. But the way that theism is presented in the world, it would seem in many ways more intelligent to be an atheist. Previously, in the Western world, over the centuries, there was much scorn of homosexuality and homosexuals. And in English they were called queers, was the most common name, colloquial word. Queers, faggots. So a bunch of homosexuals got together and said, hey, we got to change our image. And so they started calling themselves gay. The word gay in English used to mean, still means, but it's become a secondary meaning. It means happy in a carefree way. Carefree happiness is gayness. So that now the common meaning of they were successful in doing so. And now when the word gay is used in English, it's almost always understood to mean, if you're not reading from a pre-1980s book, then it's understood to mean homosexual. So the atheists, they also thought, we got to get a new name also. So they wanted to call themselves the Brights. Means we're more, bright means we're intelligent. They didn't pull that one off yet. But the idea is that, well, if you're actually bright and intelligent, you don't believe in God. That's intelligent, isn't it? Just like in Russia, prior to the Bolshevik revolution, people were intensely religious. In a whole of Europe, which was religious, almost everyone believed in God, but Russians were intensely religious. That was noted even in the First World War by the soldiers from the other side, the Germans who were killing them. The Russian soldiers, they're so religious, they'll be dying and they'll clutch to their to some picture of the Mother Mary, and they'll die uttering her name like that. They noted how they're intensely religious. So at the time of the Bolshevik Revolution, the communists, as they've came to be known, they had a program of going around villages and calling the villagers and saying, hey, you believe in God, don't you? Yeah. So you have a prayer, right? Give us this day our daily bread. Why don't you say it and see if God gives you any bread? So he said, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on heaven as it is in earth. Give us this day our daily bread. And then they finished the prayer, and then the communists would say, so, where's the bread? You believe in God? You asked him for bread? Where's the bread? And they didn't know what to say. And then they'd bring their wagons waiting out the back with bread. Said, why don't you ask us for bread? He said, okay, give us some bread. And then they came with bread. You see, you're just saying God, he doesn't give you anything. But we give bread. God doesn't give bread, we give bread. So in this way they established atheism in Russia and Russian-occupied territories, which later came to be known as the USSR. That's one political perspective. So, Srila Prabhupada often quoted this in saying that the foolish people, because they had no knowledge of God, they didn't question that, hey, wait a minute, you didn't create this bread. You can't make bread. You just transported it from one place to another. It didn't come about because of you. We all need bread. Anad bhavanti bhutani. That's a fact. We all need bread. But parjanyadana sambhavaha. If there's no rain, you can chant Jai Lenin, Jai Karl Marx as much as you like. If there's no rain, there won't be any grains. If there's no grains, there's no bread. And rain comes from yajna. Yajna comes from performing prescribed duties. And people say, well, now people are sinful, and still the bread is there. Yes, that's a fact. God is giving, even to the bad children he's giving, but not without disturbance. So you, just like the parents, they, even if the children are bad, they still feed them, but they may slap them also. Not nowadays. If you slap your children, you'll get sent to prison, if you're in America. It's coming to India soon too, because everything that's done in America has to come to India. So God slaps you also. Then you have to suffer. He's giving. You know, the communists are not making bread. So foolish people, they don't know. And then it seems more intelligent to believe in God. You see this? We live in a scientific age. Pray to God, no bread. Pray to communists, they give you bread. So communists are better than God, and they don't believe in God. So this is a very shallow outlook. It's not that atheists are bright, but that they questioned the very poor theologists of the so-called theologians. They had enough intelligence to do that, but they couldn't come up with very good answers. You could give them a little credit for questioning. But on the other hand, it's not at all bright to think that this whole cosmic manifestation is going on without any reason or purpose or controller or that we, as living beings with so many emotions, desires, aspirations, that we are simply products of chemicals. So it's a big debate in the Western world, intelligent design versus atheism. And they've both got some good points to make. The intelligent design people have a good point to make, that it's a much better scientific theory if you're actually neutral and open-minded, as science is supposed to be. Science is not supposed to be pushing any dogmas. It's just supposed to be observing the world and making statements about it. So it's actually a much better hypothesis that there is a controller. So, okay, 1-0 to the intelligent designers. But then the atheists come back and say, hey, wait a minute, what about all that stuff of burning in hell forever? And then if God is good, why is there suffering in the world? And your religion has caused more problems in the world and it's done good, and on and on. And then it's 1-1, or maybe the atheists in this case won 2-1. They got more, or maybe 7-1. They got a lot of points to make. There are many points to which the religionists have no reply. And this is creeping up in India also, with the Indian Rational Association and such organizations, and Oh My God movie, and the fact that people in India have been brainwashed, if we want to use that unscientific term, with scientism for several generations now. It's making its impact. In science class, you're taught that we evolve, human beings and all life has evolved from matter. And religious studies, well, that's not there, but your grandmother and your mother takes you to the temple also. So, as Sadaputta Prabhu, I was discussing with him once. If you don't know his name, you should. He was a highly gifted scientist who was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He's passed away now. So, his observation, when I was speaking to him once, is that Indians have two compartments in their brain or their way of thinking. And they can switch on one and then switch on the other one. When they're in work and in secular life, then evolutionary theory, science and this and that, and they go to the temple and they just completely forget all of that and they pray to God. Which is why films like Oh My God can have an impact, because they point out serious discrepancies in the God business. It's very easy to exploit people who have blind sentimental faith, even though we find many people in India who are well educated, to use that strange term. What I understand from my own experience, which was bolstered by Srila Prabhupada's merciful teachings, is what people call well-educated means very badly educated. Educated in a completely wrong conception of life. But people who we can say are intelligent on some level. They're completely indoctrinated into thinking that having a job and having an education and all this kind of thing, this is the goal of life, and I'm very respectable because I got a good degree and I have a good job and I have hamdo hamare do, and we are good citizens. So they're intelligent people. They can do things like some of them are making, there are atomic physicists in India that does require good level of intelligence. There are, well, all kinds of intelligent people and all levels. And definitely there are many, many intelligent people in India. But at the same time, many of them, they subscribe to all kinds of stupid ideas, such as Sai Baba is God. And some people would say to subscribe to the idea that anyone is God is a stupid idea. And in some ways, even the people that believe in God, in the way they understand it, it is a stupid idea because they don't know why. They have no understanding why. They just, well, you know, my grandmother did it, and my mother did it, and my father does it sometimes. And anyway, why not? They don't really have any depth of understanding or any interest in any depth of understanding. So, and then someone comes along and says, hey, well, wait a minute, how can I be a god if blah, 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 blah? And then they come up with all their rational, so-called rational reasons. How can a statue be God? They don't know what, people don't know what to say. If there's God, why is there so much suffering in the world? Don't you know you're just produced from chemicals? And on and on. People don't know what to say. So they'll make progress in their, these so-called rationalists and atheists. So we should combat them. We should present actual knowledge of God. It's very difficult to do so because people are so shallow and uninterested in these things. Srila Prabhupada wrote that religion without philosophy is sentimentalism or sometimes fanaticism. So most religious people are sentimentalists and some are fanatics. And some fanatics, they have a philosophy also. They have a whole philosophy and the conclusion is you should strap some bombs to your waist, go in a crowd and set them off, and you'll get a quick ticket to Allah Loka. And there are people who believe this. There's a whole philosophy behind it. That's why you'll find that many of the people doing this religious terrorism, they're actually well-educated software engineers et al. But they don't have an understanding of the intricacies of the science of God. Practically everyone who believes in God, they don't think why, and they don't even think that you should think why. It's just something that you feel. That's all. It's not something to be discussed. All that's dry. You see, bhakti is just feeling. And all this philosophy, that's the... But then someone will come along and ask you all these questions, and you won't know what to say. Then you'll be stuck. Then you'll become an atheist. So this atheism, this should be combated by proper knowledge of the science of God. It's difficult because there are so many misconceptions. And always more and more misconceptions will come. But that is the duty of the preachers of God consciousness. There are different levels of preaching. One level is very simple. Just believe in God and He will help you. That's one level. Another level is, if you don't believe in God, He'll punish you forever. So this is not very developed, and it doesn't stand up to critical thinking. If you haven't heard that term, and you want to preach in the modern world, you should learn what it means. Critical thinking. Means this is scientific thinking applied to all different fields, applied to the human experience, to ethics, morals, and everything, history. How do we understand? We should understand everything in a neutral way, although anyone who's a little bit neutral, they can understand that we can't be completely neutral because we're all... there's no person in the world who doesn't have what in Vedic terminology is sanskars, or impressions and ideas that have formed his consciousness. But we should combat all of this. And we can do. We shouldn't be afraid. We have philosophy. It's relatively easy here in India, even today, to pick up the more pious people and bring them into Krishna consciousness. And there are many of them. So we have a very big field and we can't keep up with it. But the real success will be, as we see that Srila Prabhupada, he went and preached among the impious people. And if we can convince them, that will be our real success. And even the pious people, they may come to Krishna consciousness, but if they don't understand this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then they're likely to remain in a somewhat mundanely tinged consciousness. Because if they don't understand the philosophy, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana, then that means that their approach to Krishna consciousness will remain much the same as before they came in contact with Srila Prabhupada and his teachings. Which means that it'll be colored by mundane sentiment, mundane desires, maybe impersonalistic desires. So it's required that devotees understand these teachings, and we should bring these teachings out into the world and go and challenge the atheists. They're challenging. We should reply to them. It's not that we can't. If we're only quoting Shastra, they may not listen. We may have to fight them on their own ground. We can do so. It means Krishna gives intelligence. Srila Prabhupada did this all the time. In the Western world, if you go in the Western world and start quoting Sanskrit shlokas, who's going to listen? So Srila Prabhupada, he spoke with reason. Of course, by reason you can't go very far, but you can go some distance. You can make a start. So for instance, to rationalists, you can say the first principle of your so-called rationality is irrational. The very idea that all that is to be understood by our intelligence is irrational. Why do you think that you can understand the nature of reality with your extremely limited senses, intelligence, and even with the whole pooled, cumulative corpus of knowledge? How can you understand infinity with your finite intelligence and senses and knowledge? So the very idea that we can understand, that we can define reality by rational method, the very enterprise is irrational. And they talk about blind faith. Everyone has blind faith. It's not possible to exist without blind faith. If you doubt everything, you can't do. It's impossible to doubt everything. If you say, I doubt everything, then the obvious reply is, do you doubt what you just said? And then you're caught. You can't doubt everything. You can't live. If you doubt, oh, maybe someone just squirted some poisonous gas into the air, so I should stop breathing. First I have to test all the air around me before I breathe. Maybe this food is poisonous, then you have to test it before you... Maybe I don't exist, maybe nothing exists. There's no end to doubt, but you can't live. Even if you want to discuss atheism, you have to do so on the platform of presuming that the person you're discussing with understands the concepts that you're talking about, because we're talking in abstract terms. So if we, for instance, use the word intelligence, that when you say intelligence, and he also understands the same thing. So, yeah, and then the atheists, many of them are humanists. They say, well, we should be good. We shouldn't kill other... If we say to the atheist, okay, so you believe that we're just all chemicals. Yeah, okay. So I'm now going to hit you on the head with a hammer. Hard. Why should he protest? Why should he, it's just one chemical interacting with another chemical. Why, if I hit your car with a hammer, I'll be arrested by the police for doing a crime, and I'll be punished. But if I hit a human, the owner of the car, on the head with a hammer and kill him, it'll be a much more serious punishment. Why? If both are chemicals, then why do you put more punishment for hitting a certain bunch of chemicals than another bunch of chemicals? You say, well, it's not good to kill people. Then what do you mean good? What is there among chemicals that's good and bad? If you have one bunch of chemicals here, and what is good to chemicals? What is bad to chemicals? So you can ask them all these things. There are so many. What is the nature of consciousness? Is it simply chemicals? If so, prove it. And they say, prove there is God. Well, what would you accept as proof? You can't prove anything to someone who doesn't want to believe it. You prove that there are subatomic particles. So I don't believe. You say there are subatomic particles. I don't believe. Well, we can prove it. Okay, prove it. Show me. Where are they? Well, you have to do the experiments, and you have to study science, and you have to... We say the same thing. You want to see God? You come with us. You have to, you follow the methodology, and you can see God. But if you don't, if you're not prepared to accept the methodology, then you can. So I don't believe in subatomic particles. You can say, prove it. Where's the proof? They can't prove. They have blind faith. They also don't even know what the proof is, most of the people. But they just believe it because someone else said it. They also have blind faith. They say it's scientific, it can be proved. Okay, well, our process is scientific. We can also prove it. So let us challenge these rascals. That is the order given to us by Srila Prabhupada. We should challenge these rascals. Don't just sit in our temples and hurry, hurry, bowl. We have to challenge the rascals, as Srila Prabhupada did. So, Hare Krishna, that's all I'm going to say now. Yeah, I think I'll finish there. It's quite late. So, questions? Then there's so many. There'll be so many questions. I'm here for a few days, so we'll leave that. But you can do your slideshow. Take your hand out of your mouth. Go and wash it immediately. That's what Srila Prabhupada did. I saw him do that. A baby was in the temple with a hand in the mouth. Prabhupada, he was in the middle of a yajna. Prabhupada stopped the... Here we go. Swaha, swaha, Prabhupada. Stop. He pointed. It's Krishna Balaram temple. So many people. Pointed to the back and said, there's a baby with his hand in his mouth. He's contaminating the whole sacrifice. Take him out. Wash his hand. And teach him not to put his hand in his mouth. Continue. So generally people, they like to tell Prabhupada stories. He looked at me. All this kind of thing. But that's one anecdote that I personally witnessed. Guru means heavy.